Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Reddos, and welcome, welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And, well, we know by now that celebrities are not the only people who are reaching out and asking for help. In fact, what studies are showing is that the help hotlines are soaring in ways that I think they probably never have before, with people, with callers who are really suffering and really suffering from depression and from anxiety and from loneliness, because we're certainly not yet back on a more normal path, certainly not here in the Northeast. I mean, the impact of the virus continues on our jobs, on our health, on our social relationships. You know, I hear every single day from people the disconnect, the loneliness, the missing of touching and meeting and going for lunch. And it's really had a tremendous, tremendous impact on all of our mental health. I mean, 30% of Americans, according to the American Psychiatric Association, are suffering from clinical depression. And I would suspect that that number is probably higher than 30%. 40% of Americans are dealing, and I think suffering is probably the right word, with a variety of different anxiety disorders. There's still such concern, even though there's talk about another stimulus check, you know, concerns about paying my rent and buying food and some of the basic things that we really probably all took for granted. And again, concerns about healthcare, and of course, the real concern about, am I going to get sick? We're reading all the time about new different variants. And I know that for people who are really wanting to get the vaccine, again, here in New York City, it has been a nightmare. The distribution is still very, very poor. So that we're still in a real, real period of a lot of angst and a lot of worry. People are still exercising less and eating more. And I think that we have to be very, very careful about self-medication, whether or not we're talking about prescription medication or over-the-counter medication. And we're also looking at a lot of overdoses that are going on. In fact, overdose-related cardiac arrests spiraled in April. 100,000 emergency medical calls nationally, and that's more than 20% higher than we have seen in previous years, which is why we have to be so, so mindful every single day of the things that we cannot change and the things, of course, that we can, the things that we can do every single day, things that are really in our best interest, and to recognize the difference. Because, you know, as I was saying to my patients, is that every single day when we get up, regardless of what is going on in the world, there are many, many things that we can do to start our days on a really, really positive course. Of course, Dr. Gary Nowe talks about every single day the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish and nuts. And I think it's probably frequently much easier to go out and have a donut when, in fact, the sugar intake will always have very, very negative effects, even though we may feel better for a couple of minutes, on our mood. And we have to be also very, very sure that we do keep our interactions moving. You know, before the pandemic, and it's hard to believe that it's going to be a year in March, you never would have heard me talking about the importance of social networking. And of course, my entire practice is on Zoom. I haven't seen a live patient since March. It's going to be 1 year so that people, in order to not feel so lonely and in order to not feel so disconnected, we have to give ourselves permission to find groups, to find interests, even though these days it's primarily online. And what I have found is that when I go to different business meetings, and of course, I'm still wanting to connect with various different business organizations, there are chats. And we have an opportunity in the chat rooms to connect with people who we might normally not be meeting face to face. And this is not ideal. It's not ideal for any of us, but the interactions are absolutely, absolutely key. And I have patients also that in between their therapy with me, they're calling the hotlines when they're feeling some suicidal and when they're just feeling lonely and depressed. Of course, I can't be talking with patients every single day, although there are actually a couple of people who I check in with every single day just to make sure that they are on a positive path. So the business of having supportive people in our lives is terribly, terribly important. And trying as best as we can to not only eliminate toxins, chemical toxins, but also eliminate toxic people. And that sometimes may mean friends and family. And we should all try every single day when we start to feel out of sorts, and even if we don't feel out of sorts, to practice positive visualization. You know, just think we can be anywhere with anyone at any time of the day and night in our mind. And it's a really good thing to either lie down or sit in a comfortable chair and visualize things that make you feel happy, whether it is the beach, whether it is the sun, whether it is the summer, whether it is meeting with friends. And this too can make really all the difference in the world. And, you know, I don't know about you, but listening to music, particularly for me, Broadway music always, always makes me feel better. So music and dancing and positive visualization. And of course, we cannot forget exercise. And again, all of the studies are so, so, so clear. And I myself, I have to tell you, when I wake up in the morning, regardless of what I need to do, I head for my weights and I do either a 15 or 20 minute free weight program. And it always makes me feel better. And it is a wonderful, wonderful way to start the day. And of course, online, there's so many different weight loss programs and exercise programs that are free. And it's just something, the studies are very clear. And you know yourself, when you take that walk, when you do that walk around the block, even though you were tired and you really didn't want to get off, they know that you always, always feel better. And that includes yoga for people who like to do yoga and meditation. And I think that there are always reasons. We can always find reasons why we can't exercise, why we can't do certain things that are in our best interest. And yet in the final analysis, we have to be mindful and we have to exhibit a lot of self-discipline. And, you know, Gary Null, was about a couple of years ago, he used the phrase, and I love this phrase, intentional ignorance and neglect. So as I give homework to my patients after every single session, and the homework is always the same homework, and that is to make sure every single day as we are navigating our day to ask ourselves this one question: is what it is that we are doing, is what it is that we are talking about and interacting with, are these activities and are these behaviors in our best interest? And it's something that we do. We have to be very, very mindful about. Is it in our best interest to have that donut? Is it in our best interest to continue to engage with a toxic friend who makes us feel upset after every single conversation? In fact, I was talking with a patient about this just yesterday. She's lonely and she does not have a large social network. In fact, she has a very, very small social network. And yet there is this one woman who she continues, despite my protests, to interact with her. She continues to talk to this woman almost every day, talk about self-destructive behavior. And after every single conversation, she feels bad, she feels put down, she feels depressed. And yet her hope is, it's so interesting. She said to me yesterday, she said, "Beatie, but sometimes the conversations go well." So that if you were on that kind of roller coaster ride with people or with a person, the problem, of course, is that you never know what is going to come at you. So if you choose to engage with somebody, with a basically toxic person in a basically toxic relationship where sometimes things go well, then what you need to do, you need to be mindful when the toxicity begins. So if the conversation happens to be going well for 10 or 15 minutes, and then it starts to turn, that is the time when you say to this person, "Listen, I really need to go." So in that way, you save yourself. You save yourself from the toxicity, and yet you are able to somehow enjoy some of the pluses of having an initially nice conversation with your friend. So it's really, really about setting boundaries for everybody in your life. So when things go well, that's great. And when you start to feel that you are engaging in destructive and self-destructive behavior, that is the time to be mindful and basically say to yourself, enough is enough, and extricate yourself either from the situation or from the conversation. And I wonder how many of you are able to do this so that you do not allow anyone to cross over a certain line. Well, look who we have on the phone again, Jason. And I want to let some of our listeners know who may not have heard the show last week why you had initially contacted me. So Jason wrote 2 weeks ago, "Dear Beatie, I've been married for 10 years after having two children. My wife is no longer interested in sex. She always says that she's tired or making some excuses. I met someone at work who I'm attracted to. It is mutual, and I'm thinking about having an affair. I do love my wife and children, but I don't want to live my life without sex. So guess what happened? I suggested that Jason have an honest conversation with his wife about what was going on. And even though he loved her, that he really did not want to live a life and have a marriage where there was no sex. So what happened last week was that Jason called me. You called me and you said that the two of you connected. You had a really good conversation, and for the first time in a very long time, you had a very nice sexual experience. So I am so curious, Jason, what is going on this week?"
Hi, Beatie. Thank you for taking my call again.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you. Well, there's a sort of formula to this, which I think connects to some of the things you were talking about as you began the show. And my wife and I have certainly begun to turn it around, but in our conversation, what came out for both of us is that we have, in a sense, to a certain extent, let ourselves go physically. We've not been really keeping up with as healthy a diet as we should have had, done. And I think that was certainly reflecting in our sex life and lack of it. And so I called in again and wondered if you could follow up a little bit. We're both interested in getting back into shape, and we'd like to do some of it together as well. Are there particular exercises or ways in which couples can work on this together and help each other out in terms of diet and eating and so on and so on? So appreciate any answers you might have. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. And what a very honest conversation. I don't want to say I'm no longer attracted to you, but the fact is that many people, and of course, obesity is, it's an epidemic here in the United States, where people really typically do not take care of themselves. And do you recall the times when we were dating initially? You know, you want to get dressed up and you want to look good and you want to do your hair and you want to wear fashionable clothes. And so often, especially after a number of years, people tend to let themselves go. And it is always a mistake. It's not just not good for our self-esteem, but I mean, it certainly is not good for our relationships. And of course, with this pandemic, I mean, I hear this all the time, that people's pajamas are being worn day in and day out. I have a patient who really was showering, and it was like, what is that all about? She's in a relationship with a man. She's let herself go. She doesn't wash her hair. Yes, granted, she suffers from some depression, but I mean, really, really. So I think that it is a very, very positive thing that Jason and his wife had this discussion. And it is important that we keep ourselves looking good physically and that we are physically attractive to our partner and also to ourselves. And I think these days, especially for those of us who are working from home, it's very, very easy to let ourselves go. Now, I may be someone who overdoes it, because after my exercises and after I have my coffee, and I have a wonderful husband, Jim, who makes me the best coffee every single morning, I go into my bathroom, and this is what I do routinely. I get dressed. Yes, I'm wearing sweatpants most of the days, but I do my makeup and I do my hair. And even whether or not I have Zoom calls or I don't, you know, I'm able to look in the mirror and I feel good mostly about what I am seeing. So I think that as couples, we need to really think very, very, you know, often about, you know, how is it that we are coming across physically and sexually to our partner? Are we taking the kind of care that we did in the beginning? And if we are not, I mean, we can all begin today to do a much, much, much better job. And it does matter. It does matter. And we do not want to be in a position where we are letting ourselves go. So I think that Jason's comments about doing exercise with his wife, I think that that is really, really terrific. And maybe they need to review the foods. You know, sometimes you think that you're eating healthily, and if you really look very, very closely at what you are consuming, you're either not eating so healthily or that your portions are really over the top. So I think whether or not it is our mental health or our physical health or our sexual well-being, it's really important from time to time to take a little bit of a break and evaluate how we're doing. And if we are not doing as well as we might like, then that is the time we have the options to make some choices beginning absolutely today. So how many of you that are listening right now, are you in relationships? And even if you're not in relationships, are you keeping yourself looking good, keeping in shape, eating well, exercising as best as you can, even though if you never want to go back to a gym, and I think that I'm one of these people who's probably never going to want to go back to a gym again, that we're really doing across the board what is in our best interest. So here you have a situation with Jason, who when he first wrote me, I mean, he was seriously thinking about having an affair. He had not spoken to his wife. So look at what has changed. I mean, talk about the positive changes that have occurred in the last couple of weeks. They had the conversation, which I suspect was not an easy conversation to have, but it really opened up the lines of communication. They were able to begin to have sex. And then they continued on talking about the importance of physical attractiveness and the importance of keeping ourselves physically attractive, and not just for our partners, but for ourselves as well. So I am very impressed. I'm very impressed with you, Jason. And I hope you'll continue to keep me posted. And talking about sexual chemistry and keeping yourself really looking good, the letter that I received last week, which was from a 55-year-old woman who was dating a man, and she thought he was just a terrific man, but that she absolutely was not sexually attracted to him. So I asked her some questions, you know, whether or not it was his smell, whether or not it was the way he touched her or kissed her. And I was very, very curious how she was going to deal moving forward. So she wrote me a really interesting email, and she told me that she was able to kind of guide him so that he was touching her in a way that felt a lot better. So she said, instead of saying, "I don't like the way you're touching me," she said, "I love it when you touch me like this, and I love it when you kiss me like this." The other thing that she mentioned in her follow-up email is that she did not like the way he dressed. So what she suggested, and I thought this was a really good way of approaching it, she said, "You know, I am thinking about changing some of the clothes that I am wearing, and I would love for you to come with me, and we can maybe choose a new look for me. And I would love to be able to come with you to a store, and why not check out some of the new styles that have come in, although I'm not so sure there's so many new styles and different styles for men." And he actually agreed to do that. So hopefully I am going to get a follow-up email from this woman, and she's going to tell me whether or not, just a change in technique and guiding her boyfriend in terms of how she liked to be touched and kissed, whether or not that made any difference at all in her feelings of sexual attraction toward him. You know, it may or may not. And if it doesn't, then she is going to have to decide what she's going to do. I mean, she would maybe decide that she was going to stay in the relationship, that the pluses really did outweigh the minuses, or she might decide that she wanted to try and find the, in quotes, whole package, and that she might break off the relationship and try and find somebody else who she was both emotionally and sexually attracted to. You know, it's interesting, in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, which is my 10-step assessment formula for determining who somebody is and somebody is not. And of course, I wrote the book because we find ourselves assessing everything in our lives, our phones and our cell phones and our computers. But when we think about relationships, we don't typically think about the importance of assessment in order to find out who somebody is and isn't. But at the end of the book, after people go through the 10 different areas that they have to go through to really assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you, there are three questions. And it kind of reminded me about this woman and her situation, that she really, you know, loved this man, but that she was not sexually attracted to him. So that in all of our relationships, we basically have to ask ourselves three important questions. Number one, what I want and need in a relationship. Number two, what I do not want and need in a relationship. And number three, to describe my relationship. Honestly, honestly, what is the reality of my relationship? And then it comes down to compromises. What? I mean, the perfect person does not exist. We're not perfect. Nobody is perfect. So what kinds of compromises are we prepared to make? Are we prepared to compromise on lifestyle, on money? Are we prepared to compromise on sexual attraction? Are we prepared to compromise on where we are going to live geographically? And only each of us knows within ourselves the compromises and trade-offs that are really okay, because nobody, none of us ever get exactly what we want. So there are compromises and trade-offs that all of us do have to make. Of course, there are certain compromises that we should never make under any circumstances at all, including abuse of any kind, whether or not we're talking about verbal abuse or emotional abuse or physical or sexual abuse. And I want to add to that list substance abuse. For those of you who have ever lived or who have ever dated somebody that has a substance abuse problem, who is unwilling to acknowledge and address and resolve the problem, you know what a nightmare that can be. And if you're looking at mental health issues as well in my assessment format. I mean, we're looking at things like depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder and a variety of other mental health issues. Now, I am not suggesting at all that you are going to just walk away from somebody who is suffering and dealing with depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder. But what you do want to see is that this person is serious and is willing to deal with the issues, because it is so easy to deny and avoid and blame and make all kinds of excuses about why I will not get professional help. And as many of you may have already experienced, that living with somebody who has a serious mental health issue, and even if it's not in quotes serious, it will always get in the way of your life and of your relationship. But what you want to see is that the person, whether or not it's an individual or whether or not it is a couple who is dealing with a variety of different issues, whether or not it's communication or problem-solving problems or sexual problems or infidelity, we need to be on a course. I mean, my mantra is problem solution. acknowledge, address, resolve. We cannot change our history, but what we can do, each of us, every single day, is step up to the plate and make sure that we are doing whatever it is that we need to do, whether we're talking about diet, whether or not we are talking about exercise, whether or not we are talking about getting outside counseling help to improve the quality of our life. And if you find yourself, with someone who doesn't have that kind of motivation, who is just willing to spend one's life feeling sorry for himself or sorry for herself, you have to ask yourself the question, is this the kind of person that you want to be in a relationship with and spend your life with? Because we all have problems. Things pop up all the time. But what we need to know and what we need to develop within ourselves is the will and the self-discipline to continue to move forward. Otherwise, the consequences can be extremely dire. So again, it's not that we don't have problems. It's not that other people don't have problems, but it is the commitment. It is the absolute commitment on a daily basis for all of us to do what is in our best interest and to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we possibly can the problems and the issues that are getting in the way of our lives. And I'm really curious what you all think about that. And when you look at your own lives, are you on board? Are you mindful? Do you mostly, none of us have it 100%, but do you have the self-awareness and do you have the self-discipline to do the things that I'm not suggesting that any of this is necessarily easy to stay on a positive course? Now, there was another letter that I received, and this was something that I talked a little bit about last week. And this was a woman who was going through a very, very difficult divorce. And she said in her email to she wanted the divorce, that she's still having a very, very difficult time after a couple of years. And, you know, Marion, I want you and anybody who's ever gone through a divorce to know that it is never an easy thing to do, even though your marriage may not have been a good one, and even though you may have been the one who wanted out. It is always extremely painful and traumatic. Because look at it, you know, when we marry, we hope for better, for worse, forever. You know, we've looked forward to finding the one and building a life and having a happily ever after. Of course, if we look at the divorce statistics in this country, we know that that does not happen for the vast majority of people. After all, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. Couples marrying for the second time divorce at a rate of 67%. And many of you may be surprised to know that couples marrying for the third time divorce at a rate of between 72 and 73%. To say that we are not doing all that well in this country when it comes to marriage is an understatement. And yet when we marry, we really do hope. We really do hope, of course, that it is going to work out. And of course, I need to remind you what I have learned over the past 35 years, and that there are three things that we all need to do if we hope to have a happy relationship, a long-term marriage, and never make a mistake in love again. And the first thing, it always goes back to self. that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and to work out as best as we possibly can the traumas in our life, usually beginning in our family of origin, so that we are going to be as solid as we possibly can. Number two, we need to do a much, much, much better job in learning the ingredients that actually go into a long-term healthy relationship. I mean, people simply don't know. And you look at why they don't know. Well, I think that most people have had very few, if any, role models to teach us about healthy relationship. And then you look at the portrayals of relationships in television. You know, occasionally I will just glance at a Lifetime movie, or you look at the Housewives of New York and Beverly Hills, and look at the dysfunction that is portrayed in all of these relationships. And of course, where is the relationship education? It is certainly not in our schools. So basically, we are all left to our own devices to try to figure this out. And we are not doing a very good job. You know, I feel that ministers and rabbis and priests, before they marry couples, they need to do a better job in making sure that the couples have the basic relationship skills and that they really know each other very well. And of course, I think that my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, should be required reading. It should be required reading in schools. And I think that every single couple, before they decide to live together or to get married, it is a checklist of all of the things that we need to know that actually have to be present in a relationship if it is to succeed. And I'm not sure that I had mentioned this to you, but in 2007, I was living in the state of Florida, and it was Sunday, and I checked my voicemail for my private practice, and you will never guess who the message was from. Well, it was from Governor Jeb Bush, and he said, "Hello, Beatty, this is Jeb Bush." Now, what's interesting is that, of course, Jeb Bush, as you know, was and is a conservative Republican, and I am a progressive woman. And it was amazing that he contacted me. But what was happening in his life was that his daughter was going through some problems, some substance abuse problems, and it was talked about in the media endlessly. And I was with ABC TV. And I suspect that one of his aides probably listened to my Ask Beatty segment. I was on the news two or three times a week on the new news talking about these kinds of issues. So long story short, Governor Bush appointed me to the Florida Commission on Marriage specifically for the purpose of implementing my relationship education course in high schools and in colleges throughout the state of Florida. So I was ecstatic. It was like, here we have a governor who cares about relationship education, and I am going to be Commissioner Cohan for a couple of years, and I am going to have an opportunity to really impact relationships and marriage and divorce in the state of Florida. Well, as one can imagine, things do not always go as planned. And it was a very, very interesting 2-year period. I met with everyone, with every major decision maker in the state of Florida, in education, in social services. And to my disappointment, and when I look back, I suppose I was really naive about the entire political process. what I discovered after 2 years in all the meetings, and I would travel to various different cities all over Florida, hoping that I would be able to really have an impact on the decision makers. And for me, it was not about selling books and it was not about money. It was really only about giving our young people an opportunity to learn about healthy relationships and to be able to make healthy choices. Well, what happened was that nobody was interested in the least, except the guidance counselors and the teachers who had absolutely no power whatsoever. So it was a real learning experience. It was a real disappointment for me. And I guess my takeaway is that politicians, and I suppose lots of people, will make all kinds of promises about what they're going to do and what's important. And in the final analysis, as I used to say to my daughter Jordana when she was much, much, much younger, it is not at all what people say or what people promise to do. It's not what you say. It's not what you promise. It's only about what you do. It is about the action. So I am still at it today and trying to convince different organizations around the countries and synagogues and churches about the importance of relationship education. Because it seems, unless we take all of this seriously, how can we expect that there's going to be a change in the domestic violence statistics? After all, 4 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. So for me, relationship education is absolutely key. And yet there needs to be people. There needs to be the educational system. There needs to be the university system. There needs to be policies that can be put into place where relationship education is going to be incorporated into our young people's curriculum, beginning in school. It's not too early for children who are in junior high to start to learn, if not earlier, about healthy relationships and healthy communication. Well, I veered off a little bit, but I wanted to get back to Marion, who was saying that she was still having a really, really, really hard time, even though she wanted the divorce. So I was saying that most people, during and after a divorce, we find ourselves on an emotional roller coaster because like a death, and divorce is a death. It's a death of a relationship. People tend to go through various difficult changes, just like with a real death, include depression and denial and anger and blame and self-blame and why me? And finally, you hopefully get to a place of acceptance. And there are going to be a lot of ebbs and flows. And unfortunately, there is no magic way to fast forward the process. And the symptoms that Marion is describing, she's having trouble sleeping and has little energy and poor concentration. And she sounds certainly at least mildly depressed. I mean, these are typical kinds of things that people go through. They are normal reactions to painful situations. However, having said that, it is very important that we do not let ourselves plummet into the depths of despair. And if you find yourself plummeting into the depths of despair, I mean, you really do need to reach out and get some professional help. Because initially, you may need to force yourself. You may need to really force yourself to take a walk, to join a gym, to plan an outing with friends and family, even though this may be the last thing that you really want to do. And it's so important that you have people to reach out to family and friends, and if need be, a therapist, because you don't need to be stoic. You don't need to buy into this toxic positivity, which I actually talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is the mistaken belief that only good or happy emotions are acceptable to experience, and that keeping a positive attitude will solve all or most of our problems, including mental or physical health issues. I mean, well, it's true, of course, that we can talk to ourselves and we can convince ourselves that life is going to be better up the road. What we do not want to do is to deny and avoid expressing our authentic negative emotions, our emotions of fear and disappointment and anger and betrayal. Because in doing that, in denying our authentic feelings, it keeps us in a world of illusion and fantasy. And what are the results of being in a world of illusion and fantasy? It inevitably is going to harm our physical and emotional and mental well-being. And yes, we can hope for the best. But if you are feeling awful and lonely and angry and scared, it's really important to find an outlet where you can express all of this. The other thing, as people go through really hard times, and this is something that people also have difficulty doing, is taking care of themselves. As I mentioned before, my patient who hadn't showered or washed her hair in a week or 10 days because she was feeling so depressed. I suggest that you try and do something nice for yourself every single day, something that is constructive, something that you can actually really look forward to. You know, it may even be a decadent cookie, okay? That's one cookie and not a whole box, because your body is stressed, your mind is stressed, your body is stressed, and you're going to need some extra sleep, regular exercise, and good nutrition. And, you know, Marion was saying that she was having a lot of trouble sleeping. So if you continue to suffer, from insomnia, you can always try a natural remedy. And if this doesn't help, again, you have to give yourself permission to speak to your doctor and be honest with your doctor about other short-term remedies. And again, give yourself permission to express your feelings to others. It is never a good idea to keep your emotions all pent up, because doing so, and all the studies, they tell us this, it takes its toll on our body and on our psyche. And if you find that your friends and your family and talking to them, and hopefully they're going to be compassionate and they're going to be understanding and supportive, you know, if it's not sufficient, do yourself a favor and find yourself a good therapist. And this does not mean that you're going to be in therapy for, you know, years and years. You know, I was watching the Australian Open with my husband Jim these last few days. I'm a tennis fan. I've been a competitive tennis player all my life. And I was looking at the boxes, the team boxes. Each of these top players, they have fitness trainers, and some of them have psychologists. And I mean, there's a whole team that is involved in these players' careers. So they have learned something that I think a lot of people have yet to learn. And that is, and of course, this is how I begin the Ask Petey show every single week, is that we do not need, and we actually can't navigate our lives and our relationships on our own. And it is so important. It is so important for all of us to have people to talk to. It is so important for all of us to have coaches at different times in our lives. I mean, years and years ago, when I was playing competitive tennis, and when I was looking at the, you know, world champions from 20, 25 years ago, they didn't have all these teams. You know, you kind of did what you needed to do. You had a coach, and you went about your business. But things have changed, and I think that these tennis players have taught us all a lot. That if we are going to be at the top of our game, whether or not we're talking about in the world of sports or in the world of life, we need to have a lot of support from others. So, Marion, getting back to you and your situation, another thing that you may want to consider is therapy. It may be an option. And having support from other people who are going through or who have gone through similar situations like you've been, it can be very, very empowering because, again, you don't need to do all of this on your own. But after you're in a much, much better place, after you've worked through as best as you can your disappointments about your divorce, you are eventually going to need to understand what went wrong in your marriage. And that's something that a lot of us don't want to do because it is very, very easy to blame your partner. But those people who have been through divorce need to take responsibility for our own part and take an honest look at the role that we played and why our marriage failed. Maybe you let yourself go. Maybe your depression or anxiety or other problems really had a very major negative impact on the marriage. Maybe your life was out of balance, that you prioritized the children and that you really neglected your family and you really neglected your partner. Or perhaps it was your work. You know, I see so many people these days who are working 12 and 15 and even more than 15 hours a day. I have patients who are in their 20s and they work internationally and they are up in the middle of the night. Yes, they are on Zoom or on Skype, where there is absolutely no balance at all. So these are the kinds of questions that you are going to need to ask yourself, to take, you know, your own responsibility in figuring out what your part was in why your relationship or why your marriage did not work out. Maybe you didn't do a good assessment initially and that you married somebody who you never should have married in the first place. But these are all things, hopefully, that you are going to ask yourself. And these are things that you are going to do your due diligence and find the answers to. Now, what you do not want to do, of course, is drown your sorrows with alcohol or drugs, including over-the-counter medication or food. You know, I have a patient who has been very clinically depressed in the last couple of years, and her drug of choice is food. And she will consume so much food and so much sugar and wonders why she is continuing to feel so badly. So her addiction is food. But realistically, when people go through the end of relationships, including divorce, you're going to have to expect to have some very, very difficult days and nights. This is normal, and there is no quick fix. But I want to leave you, I want to leave Marion with some good news, that there is life after divorce, and you should not, or after ended relationships, you should not give up hope that someday, if you choose well, okay, you need to read my book, you need to do a good assessment, you need to make sure that you're in a good place yourself, that you may very well meet a special person and fall in love again. However, marrying and people who are just out of relationships, this is not the time for a new relationship. Studies show that it takes the minimum of at least 1 year to go through the mourning process. Yes, the mourning process. And once you do this, you will hopefully be emotionally and psychologically and physically and sexually available and ready for a new beginning. And rebound relationships usually don't end all that well. So that this time around, you want to take the time and focus on yourself, and that there's going to be plenty of time and opportunity for dating and relationships up the road. And please, I want to leave you with one final suggestion. Do not make any major decisions about anything until you feel that you are on an even keel. And I'm really hoping that each day is going to get better for you. And I do hope that you're going to continue to be in touch with me. Let me know how you are doing, and let me know whether or not there's anything that I can do to help you move forward with your life. Well, where does the time go? It is 3:56 Eastern Standard Time here on the Ask BD Show. It's amazing how quickly the time goes. And I want to thank you all so much for listening and tuning in and going to the Progressive Radio Network archives and sending me all these emails. And I'm really hoping that the information and the commentary is helpful to you. And I want you to let me know, is it helpful? Hopefully it is. And if you have any suggestions, I'd like to hear those suggestions too. So I leave you with my two weekly messages that I hope you're really going to take in. The first one is that I want you to promise yourself that you are going to do every single day, that you are going to be mindful of doing things that are really in your best interest. So you have to pause, you have to be mindful, and you have to have some self-discipline. And of course, number two, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So I will talk with you next week, everybody, and I hope you have a good week. And I leave you with my favorite song, and that is what the world needs now and what we all need now is love, sweet love. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good rest of the day, and I'll talk with you next week.